Good evening. As always, it's good to see you. I especially am happy to see the group that's here because it looks like I ran off a few people this morning. But in actuality, they're just traveling, and I know that. But it was a really nice crowd this morning. If you'd like to be turning to Ezekiel, the first chapter, that's where we're going to be reading this evening. We're going to take some thoughts from there and then see what we think. So I'm going to be reading the entire chapter. It says, "Now it came about in the 30th year, on the fifth day of the fourth month, while I was by the river Chebar among the exiles, that the heavens were opened and I saw visions of God. And on the fifth of the month, in the fifth year of King Jehoiakim's exile, the word of the Lord came expressly to Ezekiel the priest, son of Buzi, and the land of the Chaldeans by the river Chebar, and there the hand of the Lord came upon him. And as I looked, behold, a storm wind was coming from the north, and a great cloud with fire flashing forth continually, and a bright light around it, and in its midst something like a glowing metal in the midst of the fire. Within it there were figures resembling four living beings, and this was their appearance. They had human form, and each of them had four faces and four wings. And their legs were straight, and their feet were like calf's hoof, and they gleamed like burnished bronze. And under their wings on their four sides were human hands, and for the faces and wings of the four of them, and their wings touched one another, and their faces did not turn when they moved. Each went straight forward. And as for the form of their faces, each had the face of a man. All four had the face of a lion on the right, and the face of a bull on the left, and all four had the face of an eagle. Such were their faces, and their wings were spread out above, each of the two touching another being, and two covering their bodies. And each went straight forward. Wherever the Spirit was about to go, they would go, without turning as they went. In the midst of the living beings, there was something that looked like burning coals of fire, like torches darting back and forth among the living beings. And the fire was bright, and lightning was flashing from the fire. And the living beings ran to and fro like bolts of lightning. Now as I looked at the living beings, behold, there was one wheel on the earth beside the living beings for each of the four of them. The appearance of the wheels and their workmanship was like sparkling beryl. And all four of them had the same form, their appearance and workmanship being as if one wheel were within another. Whenever they moved in any of their four directions without turning as they moved. And as for their rims, they were lofty and awesome. And the rims of all four of them were full of eyes around about. Whenever the living beings moved, the wheels moved with them. Whenever the living beings rose from the earth, the wheels rose also. And wherever the Spirit was about to go, they would go in that direction, and the wheels rose close beside them, for the Spirit of the living beings was in the wheels. And whenever those went, these went. And whenever those stood still, these stood still. And whenever those rose from the earth, the wheels rose close beside them. For the Spirit of the living beings was in the wheels. Now over the heads of the living beings, there was something like an expanse, like the awesome gleam of crystal spread out over their heads. And under the expanse, their wings were stretched out straight, one toward the other. Each one also had two wings covering its body on the one side and on the other. I also heard the sound of their wings and the sound of abundant waters as they went, like the voice of the Almighty, a sound of the tumult, like the sound of an army camp. And whenever they stood still, they dropped their wings. And there came a voice from above the expanse that was above their heads. And whenever they stood still, they dropped their wings. Now above the expanse that was over their heads, there was something resembling a throne, like lapis lazuli in appearance, and on that which resembled a throne high up was a figure with the appearance of a man. Then I noticed from the appearance of his loins and upward something like glowing metal that looked like fire all around within it. And from the appearance of his loins and downward, I saw something like fire, and there was a radiance around him. As the appearance of the rainbow in the clouds on a rainy day, so was the appearance of the surrounding radiance, and such was the appearance of the likeness of the glory of the Lord. And when I saw it, I fell on my face, and I heard a voice speaking. You just kind of have to stop a minute after reading that, don't you? And you say, what if I saw that? What would I do? What would I be? And we will come to some of that. And if you're waiting for an explanation of what all this means, I'm not going to tell you. Because I don't know, or at least at this point, that's not my point. I have another story to tell you. There was a man that was a junior at Wichita State University that went to pay his tuition. And he was paying in-state tuition since his father was in the Air Force. And his tuition was to be $800, but when they looked him up, they showed him owing $3,000. Now, he was told that the rule had been mishandled and that it did not apply to him. And he changed universities and ended up at the University of Central Arkansas. And he had to leave his friends, his opportunities to preach, and a great job. He had liked the school that he was in, and now he was in a place he didn't care for, with no friends, a poor job, and no opportunity to preach and develop himself. Have you ever been in this situation? How do you learn to start serving God positively, no matter where we are? And so tonight is about a situation that we have here that is a story in somewhat modern day, and comparing that to an Ezekiel who is put into a position that I don't think anybody would want to have. Even though he saw some things that I'd really, really like to know what he took away from that. So Ezekiel is a 30-year-old priest that had witnessed the reforms of Josiah, and then he looked forward to his 30th birthday when he could be priest. And, you know, I'm sure that that's the way it would be. If you were in the lineage to be able to be a priest, you look forward to the day when I can take office, when I can actually do something and perform what I would want to do. For the Lord, of course, and that I can do that. In Numbers 4:3 says that from 30 years old and upward, even unto 50 years old, all that enter into the host to do the work in the tabernacle of the congregation, and also in 23, 30, and 39, it talks about this sense of becoming 30 so that you can now serve. At 14, he saw the demise of his people under Jehoahaz and Jehoiakim. And at 17, Nebuchadnezzar took many of the choice people to the land of Babylon. At 25, he was carried away as well. At 30, when he should be taking his place in the temple, Ezekiel sat by a river thousands of miles from Jerusalem, and he was probably upset, depressed, disappointed, maybe angry over being able to serve, not being able to serve God as he should. Now I want to take just a moment and say, if you being raised to be in a position, and especially a godly position, this is the right kind of thing, a spiritually place that I'm in the right place, doing a job that is both physical and spiritual, I am all that God would have me be, and in the place to fulfill all that God would have me be. And now that is taken away from you, and you are moved over here where all of God's things are gone. The temple that I would have served in is not there. And I'm in this situation. We see them being carried away. And we know it's because of their sin, because they wouldn't follow God and all the good things that went that way, that this is a penalty for how you've acted previously. And now we know that. But for the people that had to go through it, Can you understand the frustration that might be within them? That I would serve my God, but we have no implements to serve with. I would read of His Word, but I don't have the Word with us anymore. All that is done is what you have within you now, what you were taught back here, and now what will you be going forward? And Ezekiel, especially in this case, who desires to serve in the temple. No, that's not going to be what you do. In these circumstances, Ezekiel accomplished more for God's purpose than he would have ever done in the temple. Now, that's my own conclusion, but I think that I could support it. And I want you to see with that idea, the sense of God with us, being wherever we go, whatever we do, whatever place we may be, that sense is a sense that should be a sense of security. But like Ezekiel, many times we have this idea of what should be, and when my should be is not what I have, many times we become less than happy over it. And so, the point of this chapter is in verse 28, as the appearance of the bow and the cloud of, this is Ezekiel 1:28. Of the bow and the cloud and the day of rain, so was the appearance of the brightness round about, that this was the appearance of the likeness of the glory of the Lord, and when I saw it, I fell upon my face, and I heard the voice of that one speak. And so, Ezekiel knew that God was ever present, and that the four beings were understood by him. Now, I'm not sure how you reconcile all of this, because I didn't see it. I am amazed at beings that have four faces and they just go in that direction at the speed of lightning, and then they go that way at the speed of lightning, but they don't turn. Whichever way they go, they go. And it is of special meaning to him that he saw that, and that whatever was spoken that he understood somehow. Ezekiel 10, beginning in verse 20, it makes this particular statement. This is the living creature that I saw under the God of Israel by the river of Chebar, and I knew that they were the cherubims. Every one had four faces apiece, for every one four wings, and the likeness of the hands of a man was under their wings, and the likeness of their faces was the same faces which I saw by the river of Chebar, and their appearances and themselves, they went every one straight forward. In Genesis 3:24, it says, so he drove out the man, and he placed him at the east of the Garden of Eden, cherubims, and a flaming sword with which turned every way to keep them away from the tree of life. And so cherubims are represented as power and strength. Do we have the ability, or do we fear some of the things, the beings of heaven? I mean, we should. This is the kind of language that should make you afraid. But I'm asking you, are you afraid of those beings? And I'm asking that for a real reason, because I believe that they would make you afraid if you saw one. In Exodus 25, it says, and there I will meet with thee, and I will commune with thee from above the mercy seat, from between the two cherubims that are upon the ark of the testimony, of all things which I give thee in commandment unto the children of Israel. That the place where he would meet you is in a place where these kind of beings sit. And there, I realize, are being represented there. There's not two live cherubims sitting there. But the idea of this is that his power, God's power, is greater than the four of them put together, and that he has rule over those kinds of beings, and that cherubims at this point began to be regarded as the throne of God because of that power. In 2 Samuel 6:2, and David arose and went with all the people that were with him from Baal of Judah to bring up from thence the ark of God, whose name is called by the name of the Lord of hosts that dwelleth between the cherubims. Okay. And so, how powerful must God be if he rules these beings? And we realize that they are his chair. I mean, I sit comfortably amongst them. Ezekiel's response is to worship. I've talked before about the idea that we pray and then we have our real prayer. You know, the prayer that is my everyday prayer, and I think of God and the things that go that way, and I have a tendency to pray and pray as if I'm talking to my friend, which I think is the right idea. And then there's that time when I'm in trouble, and I pray for the God that can change anything. And I pray a different prayer when I pray that prayer. I think the attitude is different. I think the tone is different. I think so much of that. And then when this is one of those moments for me that as I consider God and consider who he is and all the things that go on that way and where he actually dwells and what kind of power sits under his hand. And now I think, you know, I don't know if I can be in the presence of that kind of power and not worship. It's a thought. And so in Hebrews 13:5, it says, let your conversation be without covetousness and be content with such things as you have, for he has said, I will never leave thee nor forsake thee. And so here I have within me and the ability to know that God has made a promise to me that he, the most powerful being of all, is with me and will not forsake me. That his love for me is of such that he knows and that he will be in those places wherever I am, which is what we're really talking about. Now then, do you think that God has a plan for you? This is a pretty good question, you know. And I think that with it would be, okay, and so what's the plan? And you go, oh no, I just operate day to day, you know, that's what I do. And in a certain way, I get that. In another way, I don't get that. And so there's some things that we need to understand. God's plans for Ezekiel were greater than Ezekiel's plans for himself. Here he was, and he's wanting to serve in the temple, and I want to go through the mundane stuff and be good at what I'm doing and love God and be meticulous in the things that I know what I'm doing. And he's giving him visions that I don't know what I just saw here. I don't know how much, what does this mean? And why is he telling me? Because I want you to go tell them. Ouch. Lord, I don't think I'm the man. You're the man. I have chosen you. Now, do you think in the Christian world that maybe God has a plan for you? I do. In Ezekiel, the second chapter, we're going to read the first 7 verses. After we've seen the scene, then he said to me, Son of man, stand on your feet that I may speak with you. And he spoke to me, and as he spoke to me, the Spirit entered me and set me on my feet, and I heard him speaking to me. And then he said to me, Son of man, I am sending you to the sons of Israel, to a rebellious people who have rebelled against me, that their fathers have transgressed against me to this very day. And I'm sending you to them who are stubborn and obstinate children, that you shall say to them, Thus says the Lord God. And as for them, whether they listen or not, for they are a rebellious house, they will know that a prophet has been among them. And you, son of man, neither fear them nor fear their words, though thistles and thorns are with you and you sit on scorpions, neither fear their words nor be dismayed at their presence, for they are a rebellious house, but you shall speak my words to them, whether they listen or not, for they are rebellious." Ouch again. "Do you sure you mean me? Are you sure you mean me?" And Ezekiel knew, you see, that God has spoken and has spoken to me and has given me this thing to do. And he, by the very way he says it, says, "It's not going to be easy." Now, I haven't gone around and sought out a bunch of scorpions to sit on to find out just how much trouble that might be. It's because I think that I'm intelligent. On the other hand, if it's going to be that kind of painful, if that's our metaphor, what kind of painful is this going to be? What we think about where we are has little to do with God's plans. I want to take that and I want to move it beyond just the comfortable standpoint that we generally have of that God is going to put us in a world that is frustrating because they don't care about God. Yes, we are in the world and the world has its own rules and that sort of thing. But who are you? You are one of God's own. And as one of God's own, must you speak? And I say that you must. Not kinda. Not sort of, you must speak and declare the Lord of heaven. But I'm not given to that. I'm not prepared for that. Well, yes, you are. That God has plans for you. And it doesn't mean that we don't have free will. God does not have a plan for our life revealed some other way than in the scriptures. We don't have to become anxious over the decision to follow God. But once you have chosen His ways, God will use you for His purposes, and therefore you need to be prepared for that day. Now, I've had that story when I was being told what I need to learn to become a good Christian man. Is that I need to learn how to come up here and speak a sermon if I needed to, or lead a prayer, or wait on the table, or any of the things that we do in public worship. And I understood what they were saying. You don't know when it's going to happen that you are going to be called upon, and you need to be able to do the thing that God calls on you for. And this is a little thing. This is no big thing. This is a little thing. And so I, understanding that, accepted what comes when somebody asks me to do something. I say yes. Even if I'm not prepared. Even if I'm not where it's not comfortable. As a matter of fact, especially when it's not comfortable. That I would do that sort of thing for one purpose. That I may be able to be better at it or be able to do it well enough and be satisfied with what I've done if called upon without my preparation. Because my life is a preparation, is it not? Is not yours? And so when we come and to do that, when we have opportunities to teach, we should say, yes, I don't have the time. Make time. You understand? If I have that opportunity, take the time. Make the time if you have to. But that's what is necessary because you will gain from that. You will gain and you will have more substance to you and to your words after you have been a teacher. But the Lord says not many of us should be teachers. Well, that's because you need to apply diligence to it. You don't just get up and say something. You get up and say what the Lord says. And if that means you have to anticipate what somebody may say back to you, so be it. We have to be those kinds of people. And so, Paul doesn't state that God causes all things. You see, Romans 8:28, we know that all things work together for good to them who love God and to them that are called according to His purpose. That if you are on the Lord's side and you are called upon to do a difficult thing, do it. That's what's being said. And it doesn't matter if you think that you have the words or don't have the words, or whether that's what I should be doing or I shouldn't be doing. That's not the point. We don't look to where we end up as though God purposefully caused a bad situation as part of the master plan. No. We note that whether God caused it or not, God will use it for good. So are you having a difficult time? Thank God. Why is that? Because more difficult times than this are going to come. Now, I said all of that to bring us to this place where what we think is comfortable is necessary for our service to God. This idea that where are we when we serve God? Now, in this particular case, he was in Jerusalem at the hub of the country that believes in God, where the temple is there, and I'm going to be a servant in the temple, and now I'm in Babylon, which is a foreign nation that doesn't even care about our God, who has taken everything that we have, and I'm a slave within it. Now, under those terms, what are you going to do for God? And God has told him, you're going to be my mouthpiece. You're going to do the talking. You are going to be the prophet of God. And how many in the Old Testament have we ever seen that said, you're not really talking to me, are you? And they say, yeah, I'm talking to you. Go down there and do what I tell you to do. And they do it. God didn't force Ezekiel to become his messenger. And yet, our service is not something that is part of a predestined plan. It's not that idea that we choose. Either I will accept what God asks of me, or I do not accept. And that can be costly. Not just to you, but to those that you might have taught. For those that needed you to speak. That needed you in particular to speak. We have many choices each day about whether we're going to serve God or not serve God, and that's the thing that we must take on. That our place, momentarily or over a period of time, okay, situation does not give you an excuse for poor performance. I hope you're hearing me. But you know, I'm busy and I really don't have time, and so I can't do that today. Yeah, you can. And you could. We can refuse service as Jonah did. And we can receive the consequences that Jonah received. And then, or we can choose to accept that God is in the situation and maybe I should do the best I could do with this. That's the point. The other side of this is that we must serve God His way. Ezekiel was told what to say in Ezekiel 3:4, and he said unto me, Son of man, go, get thee unto the house of Israel, and speak with my words to them. And so have we been given the words? We have. We have. If Ezekiel spoke with different words, he would not have served God at all. That's what was going on, that they were trying to change what God says so that I don't have to do it. Thus saith the Lord is to speak as he has spoken. And Ezekiel endured much hardship for speaking the words of God. I think about Ezekiel, the 4th chapter, in 4-6. It says that he had to lie on one side for 390 days. So the number of years that Israel didn't serve him. Lay on one side for 390 days and then roll over to the other side for 40 more days. Well, we know this is a metaphor. And yet, would you pay the price for what other people did? I'm asking this as a real question. That's exactly the example of Jesus. He's paying the price for what we did. Would I take that into my heart and say that it would then be my job? You have to decide. God didn't allow Ezekiel to mourn over the loss of his wife in Ezekiel 24. when the temple is destroyed. Don't mourn over that. It happened because I let it. I, whether you want to say did it or whether I allowed it to happen, God was involved. Ezekiel had so many hardships that went on that way, and yet he lived life God's way. And our lives then are, for us to know, are going to have hardship in them. How will you live under those terms? And if you have this thing that our country has, I'm seeing it more and more and more, that life should be what I think it should be. And if I don't have that, somebody ought to supply it for me. That's the wah-wahs right there. And no, nobody is supposed to supply that for you. You are to be the one that deals with what life is going to be. And so to return to the young man who was so disappointed in the rise of his tuition and then his losses thereby, he began to look for a preacher training program that would lead him to move eventually and meet the friends who introduced him to his other friends who suggested his name to become the preacher of the one of the better congregations known. Without that backup, he would have never become what he became. You see, we don't see the end of a thing. We only see the beginning. And the fact that it is difficult is not to be troublesome to us. We trust in the Lord. Proverbs 27:1 says, "Boast not thyself of tomorrow, for thou knowest not what a day may bring forth." And boy, have we not seen that from time to time in our own lives and in the biblically, that we have seen those that thought that today was going to be a good day just before they died. And there's going to be the others that thought there's no way we can win this, and they won decisively because of God. Who are we to take the one who controls cherubim, sits on them as a throne, and say that what will happen tomorrow will be what I think is going to happen? No, not us. We will declare him in all that we do. We will declare him from morning till night. We will be what the Lord would have us be because we trust in him, who says, "I will never forsake you." Think on these things. If you think there's a change that may need to happen within you, then make that change happen. Don't let it be tomorrow. Let it be today. If you have something and you haven't become a Christian yet, and today is the day, let it be today. And start that journey that will make you all that you should be and more. Not only for this life, but for the next. And if we can help you, won't you come as we stand and sing?